You've got some tough work to do if you're reelected for the next term with the rest of the legislature and making some tough decisions about the budget. Can you say what's your number one approach that you're going to take in the first thing you're going to do for a budget solution?
Well, I don't know about the first thing for a budget solution. I think the first thing that's going to come in is a new budget for the upcoming year that'll be submitted to the public or out in the public by the 15th of December. But that's a deadline for the governor to release his suggested budget. But I think when that budget does hit the press, what I'm expecting to see in it is about a $3 to $3.5 billion deficit. And a reference to, you know, how it's going to be filled. There's about 3.3, somewhere in there, maybe 3.4, 3.2, in the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which is the main savings account outside of the permanent fund. So I expect the deficit number to about equal that. Now, you're not going to be able to liquidate, in my opinion, the entire CBR balance, because the state needs cash on the sidelines in case there's a catastrophe of, you know, significant magnitude. And that could be a natural one or it could be a mechanical one, dealing with the, you know, the taps or pipeline. So for all practical purposes, the CBR is gone as we sit here and speak today. And it's just a matter of how we're going to communicate that message to the public and how we're going to deal with accessing into the permanent fund. Like it or not, the state is running out of cash. Support the permanent fund or don't support the permanent fund. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point is we have no options left. We're not going to be able to turn this financial ship around in time and avoid being right in the earnings reserve of the permanent fund.
So what to do about it?
The permanent fund is divided into two sections. One of them is a corpus, and that's protected by the Constitution. Permanent fund has about $54 billion in it, and about seven of that or so, eight, somewhere in there, is in the earnings reserve, and that can be accessed with a simple majority vote in the legislature, and that's where we'll be, and that's where the discussions will be. But what to do about it, I guess, is going forward, I'd like to see a continued ratcheting down of the operating budget numbers, and a good conversation on a percent of market value going forward for the permanent fund. And within that conversation of a percent of market value approach, you know, maybe the payout rate would be 4.5% a year of the market value of the permanent fund over some trailing average 4 or 5 years. Some split between the citizens and what can be spent for state government, that would cap the amount that the legislature could go into the permanent fund and minimize it and force other issues on the table and therefore protect the longevity of the dividend. The current structure, quite frankly, puts the dividend at a very high risk. Because of the magnitude of the draw that we need to run the state, the permanent fund is not going to be able to produce the earnings to pay that, plus the dividend, and inflation-proof. Just can't produce it. It's not big enough. $55 billion, $54 billion doesn't cut it. So that discussion will be going on hot and heavy this winter and into next winter and the next election cycle. I expect to be more lively than the current one, although we won't have a presidential, it won't be a presidential year, but the statewide elections are going to be hotter than a pistol because we're going to be standing right in the middle of the permanent fund.
Have you heard any blowback from constituents about what has happened to the dividend check this year?
Yes, I think everybody has, you know. A lot of families rely on that check, and it impacts the lower income individuals heavier than you know, other groups, but it affects everybody. But at the end of the day, we can't turn the course fast enough. The economic ship is going to hit the rocks. It's just a matter of, are we going to deal with it head on and try to minimize the damage and move on, or are we going to put our heads in the sand and just, you know, see who survives their shipwreck? I think that would be an absolute disaster. So I want to see the legislature take it head on. And I think last year was late in the game. Clearly it was late in the game. And the governor's on point by that on his timeline. That was his action on dealing with the dividend. But it'll be readily apparent to the public in 2 years why he did it. Because frankly, we're running out of cash.
In terms of budget cuts, I'm anticipating the governor will come out and propose a certain level of cuts across the various departments. What level do you see is realistic, and what will you support going into this session for the various departments and everything from public education to the Marine Highway System, public broadcasting, all those amounts?
Well, we could start just those three.
Okay.
three that are, you know, come up quite a bit in our district. K-12 education, that's a constitutional responsibility of the state. So, you know, when we look at that and our obligation to the young Alaskans, we need to be very careful with K-12, that we don't, you know, disenfranchise educationally a whole, you know, decade of students. So I'm not too excited about, you know, burning down the K-12 budget at all. The university, I think, is another question. I think that could get squeezed more than K-12. There's options that Alaskans have once they get a good K-12 education. But if you don't have that underneath you, universities won't matter because you're not going to be going there. In fact, the young kids would have trouble in the trade schools and the community colleges. Marine Highway. I think the Marine Highway has been, well, I know it has. It's been reduced double the amount of the rest of DOT in percentages. I think that needs to be pointed out, and we need to push back on our colleagues up north that want to reduce the Marine Highway even further. And I don't think it's fair what's going on. And it wouldn't be going on if we had more representation sitting in the majority caucuses in both bodies. They wouldn't be able to gang up on us and do it. Public broadcasting is supported by rural Alaskans, us. It's very important to Southeast for, you know, emergency broadcast issues, news going on at City Hall. And it's always nice to have entertainment and music and talk shows and a few things like that. My advice to the public broadcasting is don't rely on the state going forward. Things are going to get worse and tighter for the state, and we're going to be pushed back into our fundamental core services. And the rail belt guys are going to gang up on us on public radio. That's where the lack of support is. I don't know of too many elected officials on the coast or in rural Alaska that don't support public radio.
Should the state continue to pay out hundreds of millions of dollars of oil tax credits?
Oil tax credits, well, the oil tax structure needs to be reviewed. Clearly we can't afford it. I defy the supporters to show us how we can even afford it. I've been advocating a further analysis and review and restructuring of that since the passage of Senate Bill 21. We owe from last year's budget $200 million. From this current year we're in, about $450, $436 is an estimate. And I've been told there's another $500 sitting on the Revenue Commissioner's desk. You know, I went to school here in Sitka, but they taught us, you know, fairly early on to count and simple numbers. And you add those up, you're at about $1 billion, $1.2 billion. Those numbers are not in the budget. We're not talking about, you know, when we talk about a deficit, we're acting like those numbers don't even exist. So it is a problem. And those numbers that I'm just talking about are a liability that has to be paid. When you look at Smith Bay, which is a new announcement, a big field on the slope, there's actually two fields up there. You're looking at hundreds of millions and into the billions. You know, we don't have the cash flow to feed it. So I defy someone to show me the math that shows how we can go forward without dealing with it. So I would expect that issue and the permanent fund to be right in the middle of the legislature this winter. Okay. And the governor's office, I've been told, is going to have an oil bill for us to work on. So it's coming. And we need to structure that to keep the industry going and the state solvent. And the state is the owner. And again, we own the subsurface collectively in the state, unlike all other states. You look over to Texas, it's under mostly ranches and farmland in North Dakota. There you're dealing with the surface owner and the subsurface owner. Sometimes they're the same person. Sometimes, it's been separated, but you're not dealing with, the state of Texas and the state of North Dakota like you do the ownership here in Alaska. So when you compare the tax burden of Alaska to the other states, they always show us that we individually pay the lowest taxes. And isn't that bad? We should pay more. And I look at those charts and I just discount them to near zero because we are the only state that owns a subsurface. We are different. And if you don't factor that in, your analysis is haywire. So we'll have those type of discussions coming up too.
Okay.
Clearly, the rancher in Texas and the farmer in North Dakota are better at negotiating with the industry than the state of Alaska is.
Couple local topic questions. The Cake Petersburg Road, the governor put survey work on that on hold this summer until a fiscal plan is in place. This is a project for which you secured the $40 million appropriation to mm-hmm. have that built. Does it make sense to spend that money on that project in the future? This is something that the local people here get up in meetings and say, $40 million you could spend that to whatever, fund the Marine Highway System or whatever your thing is going forward to help fill in some of the budget gap. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense to go forward with a gravel road across Kuprinov, given the state's fiscal situation?
Yes. You still have to move forward with your infrastructure and build for the future of the state. The road that heading from, across over to Cake, it's not South Mitkoff Highway, or I-5. Some people have, blown it completely out of proportion. What we're looking at is 16-foot wide gravel road, like up at Three Lakes, a logging road. If you take a look at the wealth bubble that has rolled to the state in the last 40 years, through oil, and you look at Southeast, we haven't pushed forward any road corridors. The last road that was built was in Skagway, and those guys are all older than I am and retiring that worked on it. If you look at the roads on Prince of Wales, they're enhanced logging roads. And they're very nice now. Now they're state or federally funded highway projects. But those things would have never been built if it wasn't for the logging industry. So when you look at the lack of core infrastructure that was not built in the state in this wealth bubble, you could expect without the wealth bubble, even less likely to have major roads built. The road across Baranoff Island, going east or going north, it's never going to get built. The corridor from here to Cake at 16 feet gravel, once it's built, will probably stay like that for decades, would be my expectation. It would also allow a lower cost maintenance for power, running power to Cake. And once you can get power costs down in Cake and a little better transportation, the vitality of cake increases, the standard of living goes up. Yeah, it's good to go forward with transportation and competitively priced energy projects so we can have some commerce and vitality here in Southeast. You know, the goal is to keep up with the standard of living of the rest of the states, not to go backwards. So I don't support shutting down all our, you know, all our projects, putting our heads in the sand over our current budget issue. And quite frankly, the state would go bust maybe a couple months sooner than they would otherwise.
Mental health logging in Ketchikan and Petersburg, a hot topic. Do you support helicopter logging on the hillside south of town here for those mental health trust lands?
You know, the mental health trust is a virtual separate entity within the state. The legislature doesn't have much control or authority over mental health trust at all. We have the operating budget and the capital budget and a mental health budget. When we pass our budgets, we virtually rubber stamp the mental health budget. And we've tried to meddle in there before, and the courts told the legislature to, you know, occupy our time doing something else. I think the way the mental health board handled these two areas is pathetic. And I'm not so sure that the legislature shouldn't have that discussion with them. The governor appoints a mental health board. And, you know, I think we need to have this winter, you know, like some conversations about some of that. I just don't like the communities, and both the communities are in my Senate district. I don't like the mental health board treating our communities like that. It's their private land. They can do with it what they want as private owners. But they should be able to work with the communities on disposition of properties and values on them. Their concern is that, you know, harvest the timber today or might not have any value tomorrow. I don't buy that argument. So I don't really appreciate what they did. If they want a helicopter log it, certainly more preferred than clear cutting it. So we'll have to wait and see what they do.